Hello and welcome to Talking HE. My name is Santanu Vasant. This is a special episode to mark the 30th anniversary of the Association for Learning Technology, ALT, the Joint Information Systems Committee, JISC, and the Staff and Educational Developers Association, CEDA. In this episode, we speak to Professor Sally Brown, Emeritus Professor at Leeds Beckett University and Visiting Professor at Edge Hill University. We discuss Sally's involvement with organisations prior to the establishment of CEDA and her memories of CEDA in the early days. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hello, nice to talk to you, Santanu. I'm Sally Brown. I've been in educational development of some kind for at least 3 decades, close on to 4. And I'm very deeply imbued in it. I'm now principally retired, but I still keep my finger in a few pies.
Thanks, Sally. I want to begin by asking you how and why you got involved with CEDA.
Right. Well, I'm going to do a little tiny bit of history in the course of this podcast, but I'll have to start off by saying I got involved with SCED. Now, SCED was the Standing Conference on Educational Development. And before SCED was SCEDSIP, which was the Standing Conference of Educational Development in Polytechnics. And my notes from Phil tell me that SCEDSIP was from 1985 to 89, and then 89 until CEDA started was SCED. And then it was so the first introduction I had to CEDA, or SCED as it was in those predecessor days, was going to a conference in Exeter. And I was at a life-changing point. I had just finished a master's degree. I was desperate to get into teaching in higher education. I was working already for the OU, but I wanted a proper job. And in the department where I was doing a bit of part-timing, I was sitting down with some colleagues, including a very bumptious young man who was much younger than me. And I said, I wonder if I'll ever get a job teaching literature in higher education. And he looked me squarely in the eyes and he said, "No chance, Sally. Wrong gender, wrong age, wrong social class. You won't make it." And part of me was absolutely furious. But remember where we are. We're 35 years ago, and I did have small children, and I was, you know, I hadn't been to Oxbridge, and life was different then. And licking my wounds, I went off to a conference that was about learning and teaching, and honestly, it was like scales falling from my eyes. And I suddenly thought, OK, I'm not going to write the next definitive book on the Brontes or Dickens. But do you know what? This is an emergent profession. And I think I've got something to add here. I've got a lot of thoughts. I've come through schools, SE. I've worked in prisons. I've worked in borstals. I've done some HE stuff. I actually have a lot of transferable stuff. And I think where we're going in higher education is very, very interesting. And from then on, basically, once CEDA became CEDA, I was active in SCED, and then I was active in CEDA. In fact, I helped to bring about the birth of CEDA because CEDA had a rival, another organisation alongside it that was called the Association of Educational Technology and Teaching, AETT. And AETT, I'm sure anybody who's alive still remembers it. In fact, Phil was involved in it as well as SCED with me. Anybody who remembers it will say it was quite a moribund organisation, but they had two really great things. First of all, they had substantial funds. And secondly, they had a journal, a well-established journal called Innovations in Teaching and Technology, I think it was called. It became the Cedar Journal. So by merging with them, and I helped to midwife the merger, which took an awful lot of chatting up old blokes, if I might put it that bluntly, because they all needed their egos soothed and everybody calmed down. We managed to add a bit of finance to the SCED, soon to be Cedar, set up. But we also took on a journal, and it was important to have an old journal, because when Cedar had a journal, if you look back at the history of Cedar, it doesn't start from issue one, number one. It starts from long before that. As I remember, about issue 128 or something, lots of decades of publication. So it was beneficial all round. So that was quite something.
Hmm.
You're beginning to wish you'd never asked me now, haven't you? One thing I did want to throw in was that SCEDSIP was originally for polytechnics. And at that time, polytechnics ran very, very, very differently from the traditional universities, from both the Russells and places like Bradford and Lancaster and East Anglia and places like that, which weren't Russells, but they were universities. They had a very separate organisation. It was called a committee on something, but I've lost the name of it. But they had some very influential people in it, including Pat Cryer and a man called Lewis Elton. You may have come across his name before. He was a very influential writer, brother of the amazing historian Geoffrey Elton, who wrote the history textbooks I've used at school. And Lewis Elton was one of the most generous, thoughtful, and innovative educational developers there ever was. So, as I say, we brought together lots of different things into Cedar. Cedar was a broad church, and I think one of the things we did in the early days of Cedar was we dared to dream and we dared to be different. Because at that time, again, coming around at about the same time, post 92 universities, the polytechs became universities. Around that time, shortly afterwards, the Deering Review, which said very clearly we're around parity of esteem for teaching and research, reward and recognition for teaching. So all those things came together in what seemed like a very symbiotic way. And it was absolutely fantastic to be in at the ground floor. Now, you'd be pleased to know that the young man who told me I was never going to make it actually ended his career. I don't think he ever made it higher than senior lecturer. But as you know, my career actually went from good thing to good thing. And what I would say is there is no revenge in this world like success.
What are your early memories of Cedar?
Well, I was thinking about this and talking to Phil Race, who was also involved in the early days. The words that came to mind, Santanu, were white collar piracy. Because we had buttons, we had no money, and it was in SCEDSIP and SCED, we had no subscription, so we had no income. And the only way you could get things done was by universities on the quiet supplying things out of their budgets. So all the early Cedar papers, which were SCED papers and prior to that SCEDSIP papers, they were all run out of what's now the University of Central England, which was Birmingham Poly. Two amazing people, Bob Farmer and Diana Eastcott, basically ran the Educational Development Unit there. And they used to pass the publications through their unit. Now, they paid costs back into the... But, of course, the profit that they made went into Cedar. And we did all sorts of other clever little tricks, like I set up a book series with Routledge. And again, as part of the income generation for Cedar, we made sure that all the books were generating royalties for Cedar. So people did it, I said white collar piracy, but a lot of stuff was done out of the generosity of people's hearts. Nobody was paid for anything. There were no honorariums or anything like that. Nobody got payback. We all did hours and hours of work in our own time. I was commissioning editor for the Cedar series in the first place. Loads and loads of work. But I was just delighted to do it because it was actually profiling the things I really, really cared about.
And how has Cedar changed since those days?
I still go to Cedar conferences when I can make it. And I think I still see that level of energy and enthusiasm and commitment. I think what has happened is that people have become a lot more restricted by managerialism. the University of Central England would never get away with running a publishing organisation out of their educational development unit, and on the quiet, having the secretary do all the mailing out and everything else like that, with sometimes, but not always the postage getting charged to CEDA. Yeah, there was all sorts of peculiar things. You wouldn't get away with that nowadays. I do think other things have changed a bit. I think the big thing that's happened, I think you've been very involved in it, and so have I. You will be aware that in 2000, an organisation was set up, which was the Institute for Learning and Teaching, which through various iterations went to be Higher Education Academy and ultimately Advanced HE. And in the early days of ILT, one of its prime missions was to set up the recognition and accreditation of teaching, right? If you look on the Advanced HE website, it's as if they invented it all. They didn't invent it all, because a lot of people who were involved in CEDA, who had done the CEDA recognition schemes, then went on to be involved in the setting up Advanced HE scheme. And the UK Professional Standards Framework, as it was known then, was set up as a sector-owned, not owned by Advanced HE, sector-owned set of standards that were put together by all sorts of agencies, including CEDA. So a big thing that's changed is that recognition of teaching. Now, when I first started working in an educational development unit in the 90s, there were 6 institutions in the country which had programs for new lecturers on learning and teaching. Mm-hmm. By the time I moved over to ILT, there were 60 in the UK. And by the time I left the ILT, of all the institutions in the UK, there were only a handful that didn't have a new lecturer's course. Now, we've seen some backpedaling from there, because some universities nowadays have decided to go for the recognition route rather than a teaching and learning course route, which in my view is absolutely wrong. But I think one of the major contributions CEDA has made to higher education pedagogy and practice is involvement in setting up accreditation routes, CEDA's own, but also being in at the grassroots. People like Liz Beattie, Liz Beattie was in AETT, Liz Beattie was in SCED, Liz Beattie was involved in CEDA, and she was also very involved with ILT in setting up the accreditation scheme. If you look at who were the founding fathers and mothers, if you like, you can actually see them spread right throughout educational development over the last 40 years. So people like Graham Gibbs, Liz Beattie, Jessica Claridge, Joyce Barlow, Mike O'Neill, Diane Eastcott and Bob Farmer, I've already mentioned, and of course Phil Race and me, Chris Russ, loads of others, too many to mention. I was just going to throw in an anecdote at this point. You may or may not remember. You won't remember because you're only a slip of a lad. But the 20th anniversary of CEDA, we thought we'd have some kind of a special event. And we had stuff in London. I think it was the 20th anniversary. And we asked Lewis Elton if he'd ask his son to pop along and help us have the event. And you may be aware that Lewis Elton's son is Ben Elton. Yes. What an event that was. It's the only time any of us had ever seen Ben Elton playing straight man to his father. And his father was somebody who had a very wry sense of humour. They'd obviously practised it. Ben was setting it up. Lewis was delivering the punchlines. Very, very clever. Just before I forget important influences and people who had tremendous influence, I can't not mention Carol and David Baum. Carol, who sadly died just over a year ago, David, who died earlier this year. They were absolutely central to the whole setting up of CEDA. They were central to the setting up of the recognition scheme. David and Carol had worked in Playwork, incidentally, the University of East London, years and years ago, with lovely Mike Laycock. And one of the things they'd done is they set out a system, and the thing that was different was not just the sort of areas of activity, but the values. And so when we were setting up the CEDAR accreditation, it was David and Carol who led on values. And I think that was a very, very important area. And they also that also fed into the fact that Advanced HE has amongst its accreditation, which is different from many professional body recognition schemes, in that it does integrate those values. And I don't think it's possible to overestimate the influence of David Baum, who was the founder chair of CEDAR, and then Carol and I were for a brief period what we called the sofa, because we were co-chairs of CEDAR. And then when I started the ILT job, I was a conflict of interest, so Carol stayed on as chair of CEDAR. Very, very influential people. And as I say, every one of us who worked with them and knew them well recognises the impact they had on educational development over the years.
What do you see as the main challenge in educational development in the next 2 to 5 years?
Well, it's again funny, Santanu, because when I was doing the preparation, I was thinking, how much are the challenges the same and how much of the challenges are different? That old thing that we fought against right from the beginning, where the snotty, arrogant people who told us that we weren't proper academics because we were working in educational development, and the Deering report saying that we had to look at, have we really reached parity of esteem for teaching as for research universities? Well, I would like to think that my own little one-woman campaign, which is working over the years, I've worked with at least a dozen universities looking at their promotion and recognition routes. I have managed, I think, to try and get at least of those 12, at least 4 of them to take teaching and learning as being a prime route into professorships, PVCs, directors of learning and teaching. And I think one of the things we have pushed there is to push for evidence. So if you want to be recognised for teaching excellence, it isn't just a matter of, oh, well, you've been head of department, you can be the PVC learning and teaching. Not good enough. We've got to have people who have been active, who've read a book or two. I used to be part of a network of PVCs for learning and teaching, and I would say more than half of the people in that network were people who'd never read a book on higher education pedagogy. That was scary. That was scary. So I think the challenges are still to raise the profile of teaching and learning and get people really recognised with promotions, with career routes. Learning developers need to have the same kind of career routes. So do writing development people, all these people too, technologists. The second challenge I think we've still got is the whole area of people finding time to do it, because people have to find time, and we're looking at the precarity of people teaching in higher education, much worse than it was. We're looking at overload of people. Do you know, when I was first an educational developer, I used to have a lunch hour where I'd go out, have a swim, have lunch with a friend, and then go back to my desk. Can you imagine that happening in any educational development unit? I worked blooming hard. I did everything that was expected of me and more, and published on top of it and wrote books on top of it. But that was my day in more days than I had, 2 or 3 days a week when I'd have a swim and a lunch. So the challenge of how much time that people can give to it. And then the third one, I think, is to do with the way that we expect people to be reflective, to review what they're doing, to self-examine. I think that's always been the case, but I think particularly that whole area of introspection, self-review and self-critique for permanent enhancement, I think that's a major challenge for people, because there's plenty of people who say to you, I just haven't got time for that. So I think if you ask me, is the picture rosy? I think the picture is rosy, but I think just as we used to fight from behind photocopier machines and post rooms in the old days, we've still got to keep fighting. And the biggest challenge, as far as I'm concerned, is to not let universities get away with saying that teaching doesn't matter as much as research. I did, when I was starting to be a PVC, I went and did a 3-day course with accountants learning how to read university balance sheets. And every time some idiot on academic board said, well, of course, you know, the research brings in the money, I'd say, could you show me in the accounts where actually the income generation is coming from research? Because when I did something sensible on this, I found only 10 universities in this country where research was actually the prime income generator. In most universities, and of course it's changed since fees haven't gone up, but in most university, teaching fees are carrying the weight.
They are indeed, yeah, for most universities even now.
I just think the key thing is to remember that CEDA has always been a grassroots organisation. Mike O'Neill used to describe us as the Brown Knee Brigade, that is people who go out and get their knees dirty as they're striding through difficult terrain. I think we have to remember that it's always hard to make time and it's always hard to bring people with you. We have to be in the power of persuasion and convincing. And just go back to that very first conference that brought me in. It was a speculative conference, which was about what a university would be like. This was to be just, you know, after the old 92 divide had gone down, and what different universities were going to be like. And we spent a whole 3 days playing, role-playing futuristic scenarios. And do you know, I think if you look at the people who went on from that conference, again, I think Liz Beattie, who went on to be a PVC at Cumbria, and me, lots of others, I think that speculative thinking was actually something that was tremendously important at the time. It was only a bunch of 120 people, but I think it had huge influence. So if I was going to ask CEDA to do anything in the future, please, can we have a speculative conference with no papers? This is impossible because you've got to get people there with papers to pay for it. Speculative conference, no papers, people allowed to role play. And if you do it, please, can I be the Secretary of State for Higher Education?
Thank you, Sally, for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you to Professor Sally Brown for her time. This was a special episode of Talking HE for the ALT, JISC, and CEDA 30th anniversary. Thanks for listening. I've been Santanu Vasant, and this has been Talking HE.